Welcome to Philly Coco Presents Side Project Spotlight, episode 60. This is a developer's journey into making cool stuff. I'm Kotaro.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Aaron.
And we are Philly Coco, a Philadelphia-based Cocoa Heads community focused on Apple development. That primarily, but not exclusively, means iOS, Mac, tvOS, watchOS, and visionOS development. Philly Coco's true desire is to take you higher on your own developer journey. All right, aside from the initial flubbing of the episode 60, we're at episode 60.
I know. That's a lot of episodes.
It's a lot of episodes. I don't know.
Have we reached old age yet?
Getting late middle age,
that's for sure.
But, my other podcast is over 100, and there's people that have hundreds or thousands or something. So,
well, remember Release Notes, Joe Chaplinsky and Charles Perry? They reached up to like 2-something.
Oh yeah,
like some and high number.
They were consistent for years.
Yeah, for years, and they were like a weekly one, right?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know how they do that. I was doing a weekly one, a different podcast weekly for a while, and then that was too much. I was doing a daily podcast, which was even more. Too much.
Oh, but, that is too much. Yeah.
bi-weekly is like you could basically do that with a little bit of planning. That's fine. Weekly is hard. I don't know how they did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were really very polished. They never flubbed their intros. I think
your first mistake was relying on me to do the intros.
No, I was like, it's because we never do any retakes. We're just like, eh.
Yeah, that's true. I was like right in the middle of that little flubbing part. I was like, should I retake that?
And
I was
it's part of the charm of the show that we don't retake. We leave it in.
All the warts and all.
Exactly. So, like, what are we talking about today?
Anyway. Well, we're going to start a little bit. Just some quick Vision OS stuff. Now that the hype has died and everybody's returned their, you know, everyone's decided whether they're going to return their pros or not. I think it's kind of interesting to sort of look at where, so I've been sort of watching and observing online through X or other video, YouTube and other places to see what the developers are doing with the tools, where they're pushing the boundaries and it does feel a lot like when the iPhone SDK first came out and people finally got access to it. So you have a lot of these little mini experimentations that kind of look fun and cute from in isolation, but not necessarily what you would call like, oh, this is the game changer. This is the thing that's really going to like move product. These are much more about like exploring like HUD interfaces. Gesture mechanics. One of the things that I think like I want to explore is sort of like kind of like a force push kind of metaphor of one of the things that people complain about is, feel free to steal this idea anyone, but is a way to use hand gesture recognition to like sort of like take a window pane that's far away, right? Like one of the things is the funny things about window management is like it's very annoying in Vision Pro, right? Because like you can pin your YouTube video while you're in the bathroom. That's about to say the other thing. While you're in the bathroom, but then you can walk out and go to your office and have your Mac desktop there, right? So you can leave that there and that's fine. But what if you want that YouTube video to come, you know, with you? Well, it'd be kind of cool to just do like maybe you point your hand in that general direction where the YouTube video is supposed to be and like pull it back, right? Like
do that now, like, though, by looking at the little grabby bar and then...
You could, but...
I did that in the demo, but yeah. I mean, I imagine it's hard if it's far away.
You could, but it's like this speaks to more of the laziness side of me.
Yeah, but you glance at the window, not at the little... A little thing.
Isn't there like a thing to just recenter everything?
There is.
Around you.
You could, but that's not fun.
That's not fun. Yeah.
I want to explore this idea. Like, if I have an app with multiple windows, right? I want to explore this idea of like saying I want to use my hand gestures to like navigate them, kind of like Minority Reports in some ways of like, you know, point at something with my palm. Open palm
write all that like, code for hand gestures from scratch because
or use machine learning.
Yeah.
right, but either way you're gonna have to
yeah I did find like small experiments, really old ones for ARKit. That's another that's another thing I've been doing a fair bit is like, okay, well, I can't really, if I don't have the actual hardware to do the test proper, I can do the second best thing, which is, so Vision OS, or when you're building an app that relies on kind of understanding your world space, you're going to use ARKit, right, to like get a sense of the world. And it'll also give you access to your hand gestures. So it will know, you can map your index finger, all your digits of your hands. It will be able to see that and then you respond to that.
But you're just going to get that as like raw data. It doesn't tell you
anything.
It's just like hand pose data of like where your digits and.
Yeah. Well, I did see one example where they use CoreML that they've trained the hand. They train the model to recognize hands between like an open hand and a closed palm, like a closed fist and an open palm.
Yeah, so you can see the things out there if you can, but you might need to customize it for your use case.
Right, exactly. So if I can get it so that I can build modifiers, and again, please, anybody steal this idea. Actually, I'd rather this idea stolen.
So someone else do this and make it open source
for us. Yeah, make it easy for me. Damn it.
No, that's just we'll do it and we'll do it ourselves.
I mean, ideally, it'd be a built-in system thing, right? That Apple would provide maybe in the next WWDC.
Yeah, eventually they will, but you know, this might be 3 years from now.
Right,
knowing Apple, yeah,
knowing Apple. But I mean, it makes a lot of sense in terms of like if they really want. One of the things that's tough about like people who want to do more immersive style apps or much more like interesting interactions, like a lot of times you just have that little pinch thing and you're doing a lot of that gesture, which is fine, but it's not like I would like to have modifiers that are a little more expressive, right? That I mean, gesture modifiers that would be a little more expressive. So if I wanted to like, if I could get like a sense of like if I'm pointing or if my hands are open palm or something of that nature where I can like give more actions to more specific hand gestures.
You can train like a pretty simple machine learning algorithm to do this. But the main thing is you still need quite a bit of data of the different examples and you have to label it properly.
I want the Minority Report style.
that's why I'm like, can somebody else do that for me?
The Minority Report gestures are pretty fun.
Yeah, the training the model is not that hard. The hard part is like, you know, collecting tons of examples of what the data looks like for the hand and different gestures.
Because like the way that it's built in and move Windows is fine, but I'm with you. I think it'd be nice to be able to do something like, you know, just point at a bunch of them or something and just like collect them and just kind of sweep them around, like some more, like, more general, less precise gestures just to like just do things.
If I wanted to maybe like get them to like do like spaces, right? Or like they kind of like all like like spread fan out, you kind of do like maybe you could do like a little like clap on clap
clapper off. Clapper clapper gesture. I like that one.
Did you know?
and you just like whoosh and then you change into a different environment.
You gotta say whoosh.
It's gonna make a whoosh effect.
just bring back the little bit of like Apple whimsiness of it.
So
all,
you right? Like you have been testing some ideas out though, right?
Yeah. One other thing and we can kind of move on, but like one of the other things that I was sort of I realized is that like version one of like a lot of these apps are really based off of either iPad or Mac OS kind of applications, so very very rectangular type of apps that are all isolated in one window pane. Maybe you might get one with like multiple window panes, but I think like one of the things that it's going to dawn on a lot of developers, especially a lot of them that spend more time in this space, is like, you are not constricted by a window pane. Okay. Your UI can now morph into whatever you want it to morph into. And it could be another window pane. It could be a dashboard. It can be whatever size you want. It can be whatever mix of geometry that you want. Meaning like, it could be like a triangle. It could be rotating 3D object with particle effects and you can change it. Like, let's say you switch tabs, you can switch tabs and then morph that thing to be whatever you want, that UI to be whatever you want. Once we figure out like that we are capable of like breaking out of that rectangle, I think you're going to see a lot more interesting things. And maybe this is something that's already in meta. I'm not sure yet. Maybe they've already figured this out. My general understanding from the meta community, the focus is kind of like taking it from one opposite direction of like this, we're VR first, AR second. And I think Apple, I can't say like technically, but metaphorically, philosophically, it's closer to the AR first experience.
They want that, yeah. So I guess it's, people have been calling it mixed reality mm-hmm. instead of augmented reality. I guess to distinguish that you're looking through cameras. Is that what it is? But it's in that sense. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
That's where Apple wants to be.
Right. And I think the blending between the two is what separates Apple versus the Meta, or in terms of just like you dial it in or dial it out. It's up to you.
I've watched several Max Tech videos. Those guys seem to be very enthusiastic about Vision Pro. And one of the things pointed out was that that exactly what you said, where instead of being fully immersed or fully not immersed, often because the camera view is not like the pass-through is not actually like real life. It's not the best in some ways. So he said that, you know, they dial in so it's part way. So you can kind of see your keyboard. You can kind of see the person next to you.
You can see your legs.
Yeah. Like, but when you look right at your virtual screen, you see like the beautiful environment right in your field of view. And I like that. The idea that you can tune it is one of the things that in my demo that I thought was one of the coolest things. Just spin the little dial and you're, you know, deeper in a world.
One of the more fascinating ones, demos that I saw was using the LiDAR scanner to get the wire mesh of the world and then like overlay it with a shader effect to give you like the matrixy look, you know, change that wireframe to be matrixy.
You could do that on your iPhone Pro. You could do this.
Correct. Thing. But the thing is now
you can mess with you could test that on your iPhone hardware or iPad.
Right. The thing that makes that interesting is that bypasses the requirement for the most part of needing like a night vision, right? Because it doesn't need to, you don't need to have another like sensor specifically for night vision. You can rely on LiDAR to create that space and be like, and it won't get the like people, I don't think, but it will get the general like dimensions of your world and your
bump into
space.
Your coffee table.
Right. So it'll be kind of like if you had to go to the bathroom, right? You just turn that system on. You turn that on, and that'll just give you like a decent like overlay.
Are you saying that we're supposed to be sleeping this thing? So we get up in the dark and go to the bathroom, and I just sit still sitting on me.
You know how people are scared of the dark, right?
I guess. But I mean, you could just use
they're cheap and they want to save money.
You could just use a night light in the hallway. That was a lot cheaper. That's like $5.
Listen, I'm not saying it's practical.
that's the whole thing with Vision Pro. None of these things are practical or the best use case.
But. Yes.
Aaron hits the nail on the head. Right now, I feel like this initial period, there was a lot of enthusiasm because it's very cool, but it's not yet very practical for most use cases. Mm-hmm. The only one that consistently comes up, everybody seems to like, is the entertainment value of it. For consuming certain kinds of content, especially like 3D movies look really good in there. But, and like the immersion effect can be good. But from what I've seen, for me personally, it doesn't seem worth the money for my personal use. But over time, I do think it's going to be way more, it's going to get a lot better. And this is just, it really does feel like the software is not 100% baked. It's like,
I agree.
It's just enough to get out the door to make it useful to show off potential. But WWDC, I think there's going to be some big updates.
It's so funny. WWDC is like, I mean, feels like it's right around the corner.
It I know. Oh my God. It's only like 3 months from now.
So, yeah. Three?
Three something? Like, I mean, how do you count months? Ish, it's like the beginning of, it's like beginning ish of June. So, three-ish. Yeah, a little more than 3 months.
Yeah.
Not long though. Not long.
Not long.
First quarter is going by. I'm trying to plan things out like a quarterly level, and because I was doing the productivity field guide from Max Sparky, and it's like a quarter planning is like the key part of this. Of course, when it came out, when I bought it and started doing it, it was already in the middle of January. So I'm only like I'm in the middle now of February, so my quarterly planning was late. And so when I'm looking at the calendar, I'm like, oh my God, I do not have much time left. Quarters go by fast. And it's actually, I don't want to derail this for a productivity field guide talk, but one of the things about doing that kind of planning, looking at a calendar, is like you realize how little time you actually have to get big things done. And it really makes you like prioritize. So so this first like 15 day window.
Especially you're, you know, a developer, it was particularly for one product, you're pretty much a development team of one, right? Yeah. For your particular product in this case.
Yeah.
In terms of like the client app, right?
Yeah.
Like one of the interesting things that I've been slowly being curious about. So I got a trial of Copilot to sort of test it out to really explore where, you know, whether or not it helps my workflow at all. There's like a very janky way to integrate it into Xcode if you're going to do Swift type or iOS type work. I just tend to just point the same directory to VS Code and like have the Copilot plugin for that, and that seems to work fine.
Oh, I should try that.
Yeah, the VS Code one is actually quite nice. I haven't really explored pushing, like testing it out, like actual like text editing. Because one of the nice things about Copilot is that it will do like, it will, you could do the Copilot chat, which is kind of like a generic ChatGPT style, kind of like ask a question, get the code. But you should probably take advantage of like sort of its autofilling kind of capabilities to allow you to sort of like really. And I haven't really pushed it to its limit in terms of like if it gives you like, if it kind of senses like you want to like do like a list of like a specific type of take a JSON and like convert it to like a different like naming format, like a Swift model, right? Conversion of that. I haven't really explored that. That's like an obvious example of things that I've seen work.
I've used something else. I've used some website for that. The name is escaping me at the moment. Does that.
And I don't know how well that works. I've been also like it at the same time, I've been using Copilot to test so that I could help, it can help me like accelerate my learning for Flutter. So I've been exploring that technology a little bit, trying to get a sense of the pros and cons and what's nice about it. And I mean, for what I've been experienced, it's actually quite nice. I can see where the Swift UI, where the influences on Swift UI come from in that space.
The website I was thinking of was QuickType app. QuickType.io. Take JSON and turn it into a Swift.
Oh, nice.
Super easy. It saves me a lot of time.
That might become irrelevant with this tech. So, I'll be frank.
So you're using Copilot with Flutter, but you're also you did use it for Swift, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
I didn't know it worked.
I'm still being very cautious about it, but I'm trying to like use it in contexts where I can know, like I can smell the I can smell where it's a little over engineered or it's a little too. It tends to be very opinionated in weird ways. I can't describe it. It's very much like how, you know, how you get that uncanny valley or uncanny smell when you look at like generated AI art.
Yeah,
like it's like, oh, this feels like this was a AR.
This feels like an automation tool took a bunch of other people's work and mushed it together kind of feeling.
yeah. Like there's some kind of uncanny valley feeling. And in a weird way, I didn't expect it to feel this way, but in a weird way, it feels very similar with this code, with Copilot. And it just might be me not prompting correctly a lot. You know, sometimes I'm like, that could very much be the case. But sometimes I'm like, oh, this feels a little over-engineered, or like it will give me an answer, but it won't understand the context of my question. So I have to be very specific, right? And so I'm constantly like,
well, yeah, that's
asking the question tools, in different ways.
These tools are not totally accurate in anything that they can generate. Oh, so,
a really great example is like I'll point it to a project, like my Swift UI project, and say okay, and then I'll go, hey, can you give me an AR, can you create an AR gesture recognizer, hand gesture recognizer class that I can use in my Swift UI app, and you'll give it to me in like UI kit first.
Yeah.
Even though I was specific. And then it'll be like, okay, fine, right? So I'll copy that. And then finally, like, I'll say, can you do that in Swift UI? That I can integrate in Swift UI, and then it'll kind of do like a UI view representable.
Because it doesn't have a bunch. It wasn't a bunch of examples that people wrote of that. people keep expecting these things to make stuff whole cloth. I'm like, they're automation tools, not intelligence.
No, and that's the thing, right? Yeah. So like one of the funny things, like this is where I'm sort of like trying to test the boundaries of like what to rely it for. Like I know, Swift, for example, I can't rely it for like metal shaders.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, because I don't even think Swift was as well represented by the tool, right? I think it.
No. It doesn't have anyway. Great support for Swift. Yeah. So
and
like,
definitely nothing for like metal shaders. That's too new.
No. That's too like new. So like the usually if I ask for metal shader, it would do like an old school style of integrating metal shaders.
Models? Have you tried any other models that maybe are more up to date? Like Gemini just got released. Like, what's it? They renamed Bard, which used to be called probably something else. I don't know. Tomorrow to be a different name.
I'm sure that's better. I don't know. I haven't had like because it's just trialing out one versus the other. Especially when I have to, I only have like 30. I mean, it's generous in terms of giving me like a 30-day trial.
Yeah, but it's the
but
trial.
It's still I have to integrate this in my life, my daily life.
That's why I haven't done it yet, because I feel like I better have a plan on how I want to try to integrate it, and I can't use it at work anyway. I don't.
I think it shines very well. Like I've surprisingly enjoyed doing Flutter in Android Studio.
So you're using okay.
Yeah, so I'll use Flutter in Android Studio and I can't tell if it's the Android Studio's IDE of integrating is I don't know if it's Copilot or if it's Android's IDE's default thing, but it does a really great job of anticipating what it thinks what it thinks you're going to write. So it has a lot of really nice code completion tools that will just be like, oh yeah, I know you're trying to create a heightened width. Here you go. Here's the code.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff I want these automation tools to do for me. I want it to do that. You know, I just want in Xcode I love to just when I go to put like a list or do something with one of the Swift UI things, and I want to add one of the parameters like alignment or whatever. I just want it to like not stupidly expand it. Like totally, and then dump a bunch of braces and stuff, like mess up my entire layout, because you know what I mean. You know, you've experienced this. I think we've all experienced this, where it's like an Xcode. It's very frustrating. Like I just want like the one parameter, but for whatever reason, I can't figure out the keyboard magic to make it just give me that one parameter. It'll always like expand the whole thing, and then it'll add like extra braces because. And I'm like, just broke everything, and then. Backspacing a bunch. It's very annoying.
Yeah, I agree. Like the alignment spacing one, right?
Yeah, alignment all the time. I cannot figure out how to do it. Is there a way? I don't know. I can't. I'm always backspacing a lot, which is frustrating.
Type it manually. If it's one.
Yes, actually, that's what I do.
Manually.
I do. I type it manually. I literally type the whole word manually, and then it's okay. But the autocomplete stuff is a little wonky.
Yeah.
So you're doing.
Okay,
so you're doing this in Android Studio, which I've heard Android Studio. And has like better integration of like Copilot, and so you're saying it does, like it works better.
So again, I could be doing it wrong. I
sounds like you're doing it right. It was useful.
Well, see the code completion stuff. I can't tell if that's the fact that I've got Copilot in there or like there. It doesn't seem to like at the moment for the chat part of it that you have to sign up. I think it's still in beta, so you have to sign up for. I think I forgot JetBrains Discord or something like that to get access to it. So I'll just use VS Code. Like I'll flip between that and VS Code. If I'm going to ask questions or like
a little more friction,
it's a little more friction. One of the other things that I did a lot, I used it a lot for like if I have like a really really sloppy looking like if else statement.
It's the only kind there are.
In terms of like, let's say for example, you have two views. That are more or less the same, but like maybe like one like different child view is a little off or something like that, or like a parameter is not quite right, and you're not sure how to do it. And like I'm not I'm like a super flooddy noob, so it's like, okay.
Flooddy noob.
Flooddy noob.
Super flooddy noob.
That won't help your SEO, by the way. Flutter noob. But I'll use it for stuff like that. It did get at me out of a bind of like trying to figure out like how do I create a tab bar that is that still fits within this code. You know, take this code and like put it into a tab bar, which is not called a tab bar, by the way.
This is all
like
Flutter, right?
Yeah, Flutter they call it like bottom navigation, but that depends on which platform.
But you can put it on the top, can't you? The bottom navigation.
Yeah, there's a tab bar at the top, and then you can configure tab bar for the bottom, but it's not like the recommended idea. There's something more explicit that you want to do, and then there's a difference between like the Cupertino style versus like the Material style. But the Material style is the default, but then there's also the Material style version 2 and version 3.
What's the Cupertino style?
Cupertino style is like if you want to stick with like iOS style. Oh. They have it.
That's their name.
like UI. Yeah, they call it a Cupertino style. Whereas if you want to be sticking to much more of an Android style and more the Material, like I know Material is meant to be like a global.
It's meant to be universal, cultural.
It's meant to be universal, but it has its own strong opinions.
It does.
So do you have to pick one for your cross-platform thing, or can you switch?
You can switch, but then that becomes you have to be very explicit about your switch. Of like this is a Cupertino UI versus this is a Material UI.
So they're completely separate, and there's no way to integrate them together.
And that doesn't account for like web or. Like if web has an opinion of its own.
What language is Flutter in?
Flutter is Dart.
Dart. Okay.
Yeah.
How do you like Dart? How do you like Dart? I've never done any Dart.
Dart is fine. I don't think I really pushed it. I honestly don't think I pushed it to its limits. Like it's all class based as far as I can tell. Okay. So it has the typical inheritance kind of stuff, but again, like I don't know, for example, like it feels a little bit like Java in some ways because you have to import like a lot of things and be explicit of like the path of the porting of
the importing. Yeah.
And then it's like very bracket heavy. So lots of closures.
Does it give me Objective C vibes or not that?
No. It's like a weird mutation between UIKit. And Swift UI, if you looked at the Swift UI code, I think one of the things that makes it interesting, instead of like a dot, like the modifiers are much more like comma based modifiers versus like dot based modifiers and
comma based.
It's like this weird bracket system. But then if you want to add modifiers like within the control, it's like almost like parameter. They're all more like parameters than they are like. Modifiers.
Sounds at least distinct enough that maybe you wouldn't have a lot of mistakes from.
I think that's the same way that like regular Android modifiers work.
Mm-hmm.
I think from messing around with it for a bit.
Yeah,
I would be surprised. Modifier object, and you have to like
pass
around these like giant modifier things.
But it doesn't sound like it sounds pretty distinctly different from the Swift UI code shapes. So maybe you don't have a lot of problems context switching? Because I've had that problem context switching anytime I've had problems context switching between Objective-C and Swift a little bit because they're so different in some respects. But in other respects, not really. Because they're so different, it's like the only things I would have problems with would be like the semicolons, you know? But the rest of it, they're very different. So
I think because Flutter... much like Android, but Flutter particularly is like the catch-all for all platforms, right? It's designed to be, you know, it's designed to be flexible, to be like on embedded systems, on web, on mobile, on desktop, you know.
Sounds like Swift.
Etc. It's like a UI frameworks for all, you know, UI framework to rule them all, right? But it's also... because of that, it has a lot of different library components that you have access to. And so you can mix and match Material with Cupertino style if you wanted to.
Sounds crazy.
And you can get real wild because pretty much everything is, you know, rendered straight, straight to, you're not using, like, you're not doing something like React Native.
It's like a video game. You're bridging. Right.
Right. Right. Like, you have to treat it that way.
Yeah. They're rendering whatever to a lower level. They're bypassing UI. It's not creating like code that's calling UIKit, right?
It's going straight to the GPU, right? Yeah. They have their own rendering engine, Skia, which now, at least for iOS by default, now is Impella, which is basically a rendering engine that pretty much all the UI is like translated into, and then it will render through those pipelines.
Because you're using this most recently. The output of all this, how's it feel compared to native apps on the Apple platforms?
I mean, it feels like it's like React Native. There's a smell that you can sense.
React Native scent.
The aroma. Yeah, there's a React Native scent.
It's a certain.
Yeah. If I had to say like Flutter, if you use all the default components, I don't think you can tell as well. It just depends on whether or not, when Apple does a new update, like how much that changes per OS versions. Like, it's always minor, so it's not very dramatic. But I think with Flutter, the smell or the tell might be like if you're trying to integrate native components, like the share sheet or the camera or like some kind of like they use a lot of dependency, like from a site called like pub.dev. So you do a lot of, you're going to import a lot of these components in there to like integrate with the native, like the hardware specific native frameworks. And one of the things that's a little bit weird, and I don't know, again, this just may be me. It's probably me. It's definitely me.
it's definitely code.
It's like there's no,
not the software.
There's
it's
no
not cool.
There's no like default support for like SPM. Like, I can't integrate an SPM framework.
Let me tell you,
I don't even know if I can. Oh, good.
SPM has its own annoying challenges. Oh my god,
it is right.
I
wanted to build a framework, right?
Oh my god,
and then SPMs. Integrate that into your Flutter app. At the moment, I don't know how.
Okay, so they have some kind of modularization system, you don't know what it is.
I think the way you would do it is you would do it through a plugin through Flutter. So there's a way to integrate native code into Flutter, but you would almost have to do like a different like way to package that library into Flutter. That might be an experiment I might test out, but to package a library into Flutter. And then you get access to it directly, but you would have to like build a different type of pipeline for that experience. I don't know if there's one that's built out of the box.
So are you enjoying your time in Flutterland? Because you're trying to evaluate this as for a reason, right? You have reasons to be doing this.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see like how this world works. Like, you can do all the fun little cute shader effects in Flutter.
Oh, that's cool.
Using the GSL shaders themselves, so you can get like particle effects, you can get all that things, because like you said, it's basically at the core, it's like a game engine in a sense. Like, you are responsible for all the pixels.
Okay.
And you're granted Flutter is doing a lot of the heavy lifting for you in the same way React is, but I think the key challenge there is like then it becomes a question of like, okay, like if you're a startup, or if you're somebody that is like, I only care about the platform, like my platform, right? Like, I have a cloud-based solution. The iOS, Android, you know, wherever is much more of a client to my you know, for my content than it is for than it is necessarily like then maybe I can, and I don't have enough time or money to buy like a dedicated Android developer, dedicated iOS developer, or even a polyglot, right? Then you might be able to use this. You might be able to take advantage of this resource and do it that way.
I mean, that is always the dream of these cross-platform things.
Yeah. I mean, the same could be said about React Native, oddly enough. Right. I think the key thing at that point is like, if I want to hire up or if I want to like build up my staff, There's much more React developers in the world than there are Flutter developers.
Really? Because I see lots of chatter about Flutter nowadays.
I'm more interested in the embedded story, but I'm not sure if you're messing around with that at all, Kotaro. You're just doing
You got a Raspberry Pi that needs some code?
Not yet, but whatever. That was one of the things I want to mess around with, but I haven't gotten one yet.
Wasn't there like a shortage of those things for the last several years?
Yeah.
For one version of it?
They're finally available again.
Cool.
I am kind of curious about playing around with that space as well, so maybe that'd be like a little side project.
What do you guys want to do with embedded or Raspberry Pis?
I don't know. At this point, I don't know.
Anything, it's too broad. Pick one thing.
I think it's one of those like this is going to require baby steps. same way I'm feeling about Vision Pro. Like we're at this point, we're at the crawl stage, not the walk stage.
True. And so you treat it the same way. So you've been learning Flutter with Copilot's assistance, asking questions and getting code generated.
Yeah. I think the thing that I will say that Copilot has gotten me out of like maybe I can count on two occasions where it got me out of a bind. So I think from a standpoint of like if you're trying to learn some new tech and Copilot has reasonable support for it and you're not too concerned about like, oh, do I have to know the latest API the latest style, right? I just want to know foundationally how this works. It's probably a good tool to use.
I mean, I think with these for code generation, it's like a double-edged sword because on one hand, it's not 100% accurate, and code has to be 100% accurate. But on the other hand, because you have to be able to run the code or compile it, then even if it's a little bit off, you can fix it and get it to.
It does have moments. I remember it will label stuff incorrectly a lot.
Yeah.
It will.
Don't ask it to generate too much. Generate a small amount and then make sure it works in your code. And you do the same. I mean, I think these tools are perfectly fine to use, but you have to just still be using the same software engineering tactics you would anything else. Like have tests for things where that makes sense, and don't just take in huge blobs of code mindlessly and copy and paste it.
I mean, like it's a 50-50 shot. Whether or not if you copy the code and paste it, whether or not it will,
yeah,
you can fix it. I think that's what I mean.
We have the advantage and the disadvantage here. Code, it's not 100% accurate, but you can get snippets of code that are good enough. It sounds like that you can massage them and make it work. You know, to make it like compile and run.
As long as you can understand it,
I think that's the thing you have to understand. Yeah,
the funny part was when I tried it with ARKit. And tried to get the hand gestures, it was constantly giving me API specific API calls that don't exist in ARKit. So it was literally guessing.
It's just making up stuff, yeah.
It was just making up stuff. So I was like, I could see like, okay, there's limitations of where
learning.
Yeah.
So you're saying you can learn with this, but if it's just like spitting out nonsense sometimes, I guess the point is that you know it's nonsense because it doesn't work once you try to put the code in your project. Oh, yeah. So you do have that part of the feedback loop there where you can quickly realize that it's giving you nonsense.
And I tried to like see if it could figure itself out because sometimes I've heard examples where you're like, no, sorry, that's wrong. Can you give me a better answer?
Try again.
Try again and be like, oh yeah, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. Here you go.
I don't like that. There's more
buggy code for you.
I don't like that they make these. They make these things spit back out like sentences like that. Like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, it's a freaking automation tool. I don't need it to. I don't need you to be trying to trick me into thinking I'm talking to something. I find that irritating.
I mean,
I just get it. Just give me the code. That's why if I do use one of these things, I don't use it very often.
You would prefer a very rude.
I curse out Siri all the time.
I can imagine you should get one of these like really obnoxious. Like you can tell the. I wonder if you can tell Copilot. It's like, okay, Copilot, I want you to be an obnoxious version of yourself and never apologize.
Yeah, I mean, I do that. I mean, I basically, if I use these things at all, I'm like, be terse. Like, don't apologize.
Should test that out. But
yeah, you can kind of influence the output by if you say stuff like, I've done like assume that I am a senior developer with many years of experience and just and be terse or something. And sometimes that, that kind of thing helps.
One thing, getting back quickly to Flutter, that I've noticed is that it is very bracket heavy or open bracket heavy.
Open
or closed back.
Oh, like yeah. Curly braces like open, or like,
curly braces, curly brackets.
Curly brackets. Okay.
Or it feels that way because what ends up happening is like, at least in my sort of default commenting, it will defaultly comment like, "Oh, this is the close. This is the close bracket of this widget."
Oh God.
And everything, and I actually prefer that because, yeah, like, I, yeah. now I know where that ends.
That reminds me of like the nested closure hell that we used to have. Yeah. Welcome back, nested closure hell. Oh God.
Yeah. I appreciate it because it's like I don't like. I guess you could technically double click on that bracket and it will like highlight.
The IDE should make this clear, in my opinion. Yeah. These things, you shouldn't need to put comments that say this is. That's like I think that's a terrible use of comments because it could change.
They do change it for you.
I'll say so the comments are automated. You know, yeah. The tool, the editor could just highlight them or something. But okay, well, the comments, that's fine.
Yeah, you at can least turn it's automated. That off. You can turn that off.
at least they
want. I do it because I need to be on rails.
There's that many. So there, you can't avoid it. You have to do like all these.
No, you can turn that off.
No. I mean, you need to. You can't avoid doing a lot of nested closures by refactoring, or do you?
You could.
Just like in Swift example, UI, I find myself like trying to refactor a lot because it doesn't take much to start getting a confusing, hierarchy.
I can't tell just yet. Because everything, ideally you would make it composable and you would figure out like how I can like build like in blocks of like,
well, that's widgets. What Swift UI is really good at. It's really easy to say you can make, like, I find myself doing things like, here's a function, a view builder function that make this part of a view. And then I just call it in the middle of the body statement. Or you can create a whole view file and just pull it in. Like, it's very easy to decompose stuff in Swift UI. So how does that compare to Flutter in terms of, like, at least the view part, decomposing views?
Yeah, and in their world, they call it widgets. And
which actually might make more sense conceptually if you think about what a Swift UI view is. It's kind of like a combination. We've talked to Azam before about it. He's seen it as kind of like a model view pattern. It's kind of model and a view. And
I haven't really explored the whole, like, because I'm just doing like basic stateless and stateful widgets. So like think of like stateless as like you don't have much interactions at all with it. But stateful is like if you want to like provide some updates to like components or like its parent.
So that'd be like using a state. Property wrapper.
It'd be like using like a binding or state, binding. Yeah, in our world, in Swift UI world. So like, I know there are better frameworks for that. Arpit had mentioned like Block, and I forgot the other one. But
isn't there some really important component that is not like provided out of the box? You had to pick one from a menu. Am I thinking of something else?
Not sure. There's, I know there's framework like some that pre, you there's pick. Some pre-configurations. Out of the box.
I thought it was state management. I thought it was state management. That there wasn't like a built-in story for it. You had to pick some framework. Is that true?
I have to test that out. I don't think so. I when I did a test build, maybe I need to test that, but I don't remember having to choose a state management system. It'll just give you that, the one generically out of the box, which for basic stuff.
Well,
is
there's
fine.
There's a list of state management approaches on the Flutter page. That's what I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, think. Yeah.
So they have like Redux, Fisher, Block, Get It. Yeah, this is what I'm talking about. So, for Swift UI, there's one way. I mean, there's the Apple way. You don't install some state management framework, really, right? You just use the tools that Apple provides and you wrap. I mean, you can use stuff that wraps them and does different things, but but I feel like this is what I was thinking of. So what is it out of the box? Do you have to use one of these things? Like, Or I guess there's just something simple that's built in, so you haven't...
There is something simple that's built in, which is the whole state and stateful, stateless and stateful widgets. Okay. Like you predefine them almost like a protocol-ish type thing.
But yeah, this is where block is listed.
Yeah. And then, but I don't know if it's as sophisticated as something like blocks, where there's a little more like observable states, I think. And then being able to publish and publish events to other like widgets that are like outside of your hierarchy or something like that.
That's where I think the you have to consider what tooling you're using when you're trying to do something more complicated like that.
I'm speaking out of hand here.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, like, I don't know anything about Flutter. I'm sure
our Flutter compatriots is probably screaming out their minds at this moment. You own nothing.
We're Swift. We mostly work in Swift UI nowadays, which is people. True. So.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, so let's.
This is a newbie. This is a Flutter newbie talking.
For the last segment here, why don't we switch gears a little bit? Do a little. You've had some experience with Copilot. You've looked at how that kind of thing integrates with VS Code and a little bit with Android Studio. You've looked at Flutter and some other approaches. So what do you think that is going to happen in DubDub? I guess like because there's been so many rumors now about generative AI coming to Apple's platforms at DubDub, and so specifically from I think we've talked a little bit about this before, but the rumors are getting more concrete about things that are happening.
I think personally that there is definitely going to be a rebranding of Siri and be sort of like this compass, like basically how Microsoft rebranded Copilot, whatever their thing was, to Copilot, right? Everything Copilot. Siri will basically take the place. No Siri.
Oh, no, you can't say, you gotta say, I can't say Digus. I was watching Max Tech, because they've had a lot of good videos lately about this stuff. They have one out about the generative AI coming to like iOS 18 and stuff. And I think it's that video where every time they say, you know, the name of the assistant on Apple's platforms, it's like muted.
Yeah,
it's just so he doesn't set you off. But their video was pretty good, and there's a lot of stuff that's rumored to be coming.
I can see Apple completely ripping off the idea of like having like completely doing code completions better. Doing all sorts of typical like ChatGPT style like communications now.
I don't know. So the thing that I've heard and I've been seeing is a lot of this is on the idea that the devices themselves do the processing, and the next iPhone, at least the high end ones, might have specialty hardware, you know, maybe some special way of reading data from the storage medium so that you can use models that are larger than the memory footprint would otherwise allow or stuff like that. So but that's for the devices. For your development, you think Apple would be using like a server-based approach? I feel like they really don't want to, but can you avoid that? At least for Siri, you'd have to do something, right? I don't know. I feel like Apple really wants to do stuff locally if at all possible. And with Apple Silicon, they all have neural engines.
I don't know. Aaron, you're the AI guy here.
No, not really, but yeah, I don't think they would do any kind of cloud-based thing.
Because Xcode Cloud is so amazing. Like, why not continue to add features?
Well, it's more the thing of just, you know, having, like, sharing your data with anybody else. So.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think they want to do that. So, yeah, I feel like it's going to be more limited then, right? I mean, by its nature, even if they have advances in how the models are built and the processing capabilities, it's still not going to be the same as a big server farm, right?
I mean, if it's WWDC, I have to think they were going to improve their APIs to be a little friendlier to create models in general, right?
I feel like
inside your app.
I feel like so they added you know the last update we have, you know, things like the model and stuff. It just writes your code.
Yeah.
I think maybe that'll be improved. Maybe I mean like do I think for Apple AI is more of features in the end products. I for developers, do you really think they're going to focus on a Copilot style developer interface. Is, in your experience, is that valuable enough? Do you want Apple to do that, or do you want just maybe like improvement on you know, maybe some code? You want improvement on like on the basic Xcode things we have now? Like,
I think it's okay.
I could see like a tool that was like some kind of generalized large language model that ran locally, that like read in your one project and just had context aware stuff based That's on what's in yeah. one particular project. But yeah. not just this thing that just spits out anything.
There's I think that's probably right on. There's a, in the documentation system, for instance, you can write documentation comments and generate documentation, and then it includes like your documentation alongside links out to, like, if you're using SwiftUI or something, it'll like link out to say, oh, you're using this SwiftUI module and stuff. So they kind of have very, very rudimentary, like, starting on the fringes of like your of having like features that are trying to, I think, do what you're saying, like trying to make it easier for you to like understand the code base when you come back to it. And documentation is one way. But I if you had a model that could have that context, and which is the goal with any of these things to do that, then I think that would be a big improvement. Even if it's just my project, where if I want to, you know, if I want to be like, I want to build this, you know, use this module, whatever, and I don't quite remember how it works, I can just kind of like ask it, and then it can generate code based on my actual code. That'd be nice.
I mean, I joke about this, and I don't know whether or not it's a great idea, but it's like, you just create the unit tests and then update them.
I can't with the unit tests.
Every time
I don't want to write any tests, which is fine. I mean.
Well, you know what's funny is like they write fine tests.
I mean, I get it, because most of the time the writing a test is boilerplate, and then it's like a tiny little bit of the actual test. It's mostly just set up and then do thing, and then here's what to expect. And it's like, you should be able to automate generating that stuff. And so I agree with that. That would be a good thing. Maybe iOS developers would start writing tests if it was just like easier.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we can go on a long conversation around the value of tests in terms of like how much you should do and where it makes sense and all that stuff, and if you should manually do it.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't help that some of the Apple examples and just the kind of standard way that you're taught to build things doesn't always lend itself well to testing.
I think the thing is, like, testing just strikes me as a very specific discipline, and it's not quite it requires its own level of approach development.
You are always testing. That's the thing. Like, you are testing, even if that means you're just running it in the simulator or in preview or something. That is a kind of testing. That's basically where most, at least small iOS developers, still seem to be today. It's mostly manual testing, QA testing, not a lot of actual automated testing. Mm-hmm. And at least for the client side, that's where maybe Apple will be like, hey, testing is now easier this year. Let Dingus do it. You know?
Right. Yeah, so, but I mean, that's one of the funny parts that I think would come out of that.
So we have also there's rumors of like image generation from text stuff and video same kind of usual things. But from a developer perspective, besides like, I mean, code completion, being able to maybe, you know, understand the context of my project and generate snippets and maybe even entire like structures. You know, that generating things from JSON, you know, instead of that's another usual one you mentioned earlier. What else would you want it to do? Based on your experience, what can these things do that, if Apple integrated it into the developer pipeline, it would be really useful besides what we talked about?
I'm not sure what they're going to do with the app intents / shortcuts framework.
Really? How so? What do you mean?
Just, I don't know, maybe they'll make it better and more... More, I mean, more.
I haven't used it. I've only barely looked at the documentation.
Everything
so
is like you have to give very specific examples of what you want to do.
I understand. Yeah, that's like, a good point.
if you didn't call this exact text string in your example or structure your request exactly right, then it doesn't work.
Hey, maybe that's a really good idea.
You have
maybe
a limit, and you have like a very limited number of shortcuts that you can have.
That's interesting. I wonder how they would do that.
Yeah, that's why I'm curious what they're if they're going to do that. It's like, oh, if they rip Siri apart completely, is this thing going to?
I mean, is there some way that when you go to build or upload that it can create some kind of abstract structure that can help inform the you know, the client, the OS when you download the app to better integration? I don't know. Maybe there's some kind of like added context that can be generated, like you can with like anything can generate, like symbols can get generated. You know, maybe it'll be part of the build process, and then the iOS will be able to take that context and use it to fine tune the model that's being used for. Sorry, I don't know about how you might do this, but if anyone could do it, Apple would be thinking about that. That would be great if this stuff could be like, if I could just tell the phone, like, I want to order a pizza from blah, 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 and it just figures out the right app to use or something. That would be
like, you don't have to like mention the specific app by name.
Exactly. That would be
like
nice.
You have to do now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. See, I guess that's why I don't see a lot of the Dingus integrations. I'm not going to say.
Yeah. It's just it's still kind of clumsy.
Yeah. The way maybe that's why, because right I haven't used it.
With the, yeah. It's one of those things where, and whether or not it's, I keep hating that word, but whether or not it provides business value to the company itself.
Why like, do you hate that? Why do you hate that?
I don't know. Point. It's just, I know. It's just, but it's just more like sometimes there, it is usually when you say business value, it's always in opposite value to user value, right? So like if it's useful to the user, does not have inherited business value, but that's not always the case, right?
I mean, like, right now it's like, assuming your app can be like broken off into little intents that, you know, can be encapsulated in this framework, then it's like, oh yeah, the system will suggest things already, but it's like, it has to, what you want, what your app does has to be able to work in that way in these like very small little chunks. And maybe they can expand that to do more things.
There, the suggested things that iOS can show up. I don't find that particularly useful most of the time because it's pretty
limited in what it can suggest, and you have to, you know, as a developer, you have to, you know, structure your app in a way where it works for that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I find that a lot of the suggestions are just not appropriate or just not. Like, it's just, I'll just get random things like, would you like to turn on focus mode for this meeting? And it would happen one day and then never happen again and stuff like that. I'm like,
That's definitely something they can improve. Yeah,
that would be cool. So, code generation, task generation, that would be very cool. Siri intents improvement. Anything else we haven't thought about before we wrap this up? Speculative fiction of WWDC. We'll definitely come back to this topic.
We'll pencil that as it gets closer to WWDC.
Okay, so just before we finally do our wrap up here, Koto, final words about using Copilot with Swift or with Flutter or with anything. What do you think? Your final thoughts?
I think it is as it's advertised. It's much more of an assistant. I would probably lean it for much more paths well traveled. I would trust it more in areas where like that are fairly well traveled in terms of like there's a lot of code out there that has examples of the problem you're trying to solve, but nothing too niche in terms of like if I'm trying to build the crazy, you know, hand gesture, anything that requires some sort of like data model or binary or something like that. I don't really trust that it will do the right job and it'll be more of a waste of time than actually a time saver. So if you can figure out ways to like utilize things that are redundant or something that you know that's a problem that's already been solved and you just don't know the specific, you don't know the language just yet, so you just rely on that for those types of things, it's great. Yeah, I think it's fine. Cool.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's all we have for today. You can learn more about FillyCoco at fillycoco.org. There you'll find links to our Slack group, meetup schedule, and contact info. If you're feeling generous, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your podcast platform of choice is. And please share us with all your developer friends. And one more thing. I don't have jokes today, unfortunately. I kind of ran out of time. So this is going to be a non-sponsorship sponsor of our good friend, Muhammad Azam, otherwise known as Azam Sharp. You can find his website at azamshop.school. There you'll find online courses that he provides, as well as, I guess, in an IRL or in Zoom IRL workshops. He has a few coming up right now. One about reality kits, kind of like intro to reality kits. So if you're going to get into doing Vision OS work, that will be on February 24th. He also has a server-side Swift with Viper on March 9th.
Oh, that's cool.
And if you need something a little more foundational, you're just kind of starting from the beginning, you need to like build up. He also has one called Swift UI Fundamentals on March 23rd. So you can sign up for those workshops from his website. Again, that's azamsharp.school/workshops.html. And till next time, good luck on your own developer journey. We will cheer for you always.
Are you saying that we're supposed to be sleeping this thing? So we get up, it's dark, I go to the bathroom, and I'm just, it's still sitting on me.
You know how people are scared of the dark, right?